Dark Wheels.
Dork Words.
A Game of Thrones podcast. Episode 18.
The Horror. The Horror.
Welcome everyone to our horror trifecta of episodes. Our last sort of genre tangent before we bring it all home for season 2 of Game of Thrones. I am your host, Chuck Davis. And with me this week are
Molly Welsh,
Eric Salonis,
and the Reverend Podfather.
The Reverend Podfather, our special guest contributor this week. Before we go any further, Podfather, perhaps explain to our listeners what your deal is.
I'm one of the hosts for the Necronomicast. We're basically a horror-based podcast. We do commentary, interviews with some of the industry people, people that have been actors that have been in movies, and we've also done some interviews with some of the stunt people and all that kind of stuff. So
it's a great podcast. Where can they find it?
Necronomicast.com. Yeah, pretty easy.
So it's very apropos you're with us, because we finished our fantasy genre discussion, which was a mega 2 hour long episode. And then we decided to break it up into 3 smaller episodes for sci-fi. And then we're going to do the same here with horror. Talk about all the ins and outs of horror. Which ought to bring us right up until about the point where season 2 of Game of Thrones starts.
Season 2. The trailer came out just last night on HBO Go or HBO, whatever. And we watched it today before we started recording. And I was clapping just like... while we were watching it, there's so many little teensy tiny shots of like pre-action moments, or like right before somebody swings or something, and like battle Cersei cocking her eyebrow, all sorts of awesome stuff. So I'm very excited.
It occurred to me, in the trailers now, they do the flash. Mm-hmm. Like, you barely get a chance to even see who the person is or what they're doing. Yeah, yeah. But do you think they're more inclined to do trailers like that these days because they know that everybody's going to just like freeze frame them on their on their laptops and just basically break it down, and they can see, okay, everybody's going to want to know what all the characters look like, but we can't put all the characters in the trailer, so just give them a quick flash,
right,
and everybody can just like stop the screen on the person they want to look at.
There's Melisandre with her clothes on. There's Melisandre with her clothes off.
Yes, I'm pretty sure we saw, as Molly pointed out, the shot that it was just her face, but it looked like Melisandre birthing a shadow baby.
Or
as we say here, Melisandre birthing a shadow baby.
Rip your face! For those of you who have not heard it, please check out Eric's tribute to not only Melisandre, but The Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid, yes.
The song is brilliant. Anyone?
It's a bonus episode up on darkwingsdorkwords.com.
More of those to come, I think.
Indeed, yes.
Melisandre looks pretty good. She's not quite what I envisioned for that character. I guess that happens. Actually, the more sort of obscure or down the line the casting gets in this show, the more kind of iffy I am on their casting decisions.
Well, I've noticed that they've been going more... they've been grounding like the description of the characters a little more. Like, for instance, I mean, like, Daenerys didn't have the eye color, you know?
Right.
And so I'm thinking, you know, they're taking the more fantastic descriptions of the characters in the book and just making them a little more...
Yeah, they're muting.
...realistic and muted, yeah.
And it, you know, I still wasn't... It wasn't fulfilled when I saw Melisandre, but the whole first season, we're like, oh, Tyrion, he's supposed to have 2 different color eyes, shock of hair so blonde it's white, and all of these, like, super fantastical colors, and then we see Melisandre, and we're like, why isn't every single thing about her red? Oh, because she's a human being, and they're basing this in some sort of reality. I forgot.
Right.
I didn't see any fucking direwolves in that preview, though. That isn't something I did not see. And
well,
I'm watching.
They're just buying the artists more time to do their CGI rendering.
Yeah, they're trying to get it all finished.
Exactly.
But can you imagine
the
response
last
if there
done.
Was like a little action shot of like this big growly face
direwolf? Well, I hope they're not as stingy with the CGI wolves as they were with the live action wolves in season 1, where it was just, or you know, the husky dogs.
The huskies.
Yeah.
It was lame. And we're going to catch Wayne up, because Wayne is not a Game of Thrones fan as of yet. But he just doesn't even realize how much of a fan he's going to be by April 1.
I just didn't have HBO. That's my my only excuse.
That's a good one.
But I'm a huge fantasy fan, so anything that has to do with swords and whatnot.
How about a whole throne made out of swords?
That would be... Yeah, awesome. So we'll catch me up.
The DVD set for season 1 is...
When is it? Yeah.
It's imminent. I know, like, on Amazon, I saw you could pre-order it for, like, $35.
Well, it's about damn time.
Yeah, right? They need to give people time to, like, catch up.
Well, I think this is probably intentional, just to make sure it drops just in time to stir up fervor for season 2.
Like, when Lord of the Rings came out, they would do they would release the extended version, like, just a month before, like, weeks before the next movie was coming out.
Right.
And, yeah.
That's how you hook them.
I've still got all season 1 on my DVR. I think I'm going to rewatch them.
To be released March 6th.
Oh.
Well, it does not give people very much time.
The DVDs are out.
We have just created a time anomaly.
Anyway. Let's go forward in time.
Right?
This deserves some investigation. We got to find out if there's any extras that are worth getting excited about on the DVDs.
Oh. Who's going to buy it?
I'm gonna buy it.
Are you really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because I told some of my friends, like, I'm gonna make them watch it with me.
Game of Thrones fever is heating up. Catch it.
Yeah. I challenge everyone to, like, find some person that they really like who's not a fan and get them to either read the book or watch the first couple episodes. Because every single copy of Game of Thrones I've ever bought has left my hands in less than a week. I've never been able to read it twice because I'm always like, you've never read this, take it.
I'm not sure what happened to my copy of Game of Thrones.
Apparently my copy of Dance with Dragons is now covered with glitter. But
of course it is. God. The one that's on my desk upstairs that I was going to read again, it's going home with you, Wayne.
I still got to catch up on World War Z. I'm still reading that.
I have not read it either. That's in the stack.
I want to read.
All right, so horror.
Horror.
So we talked a lot about, different genre stuff, and like fantasy in particular. I think fantasy fans are sort of relegated to accepting substandard productions when it comes to TV and movie. You just kind of take what you can get because you love the ideas and you overlook the poor production and stuff. But I think horror fans have to put up with that even more. Or, I mean, horror just runs the gamut quality-wise. Like, it seems like if you are a total hack and you want to just make a cheapo movie, just to say you made one, the cheapest kind of genre movie you could put together would be, like, a horror movie, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's movies like that out there. I'm not disparaging the idea of making a cheap horror movie. But I'm just saying, it seems like there's probably more bad horror movies than any other genre out there. Or at least it's right up there.
Horror is such an interesting genre to me.
Chick flicks is probably right after that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, chick flicks usually have high production values, though.
But just bad.
Just a horrible waste of time
for
everyone.
There's a whole network.
Lifetime. So that's true. That is true. The interesting thing to me about horror is because it's such... I think it's a very... subjective genre because different things scare different people, and I've known people who just swear by a certain subgenre of horror and other people who just aren't into that at all, and just it's such an interesting thing to me because some people I'll talk to people who are like, no, that wasn't scary at all, this was scary, and I'm like, no, that's not scary, I think it's a very subjective genre, and so it's interesting to me that it runs such a gamut like that, and it depends on what you're into and what scares you, I think.
And there's this that I think that mainly it's kind of out there because it's easy to do, but I think there's plenty of bad dramas and bad comedies, and it's just, I think that in the horror genre it's all kind of combined together. You're not going to find a horror movie that's going to be up for an Oscar anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's because of they've lowered a bar or they're not really making them like they used to. There are some movies that are out there, and when it comes down to movies, mainly that's what I'm talk about, but it's just easy to do, and the thing is that it combines a lot of things. Horror films combine not only the fun of monsters and blood and gore, shock scares, as well as comedy and drama and suspense, which you don't necessarily get in any other film genre. So I think that's why
it's a genre that has room for everything, sort of.
Kind of. I think there's...
I think it also gives the audience and the filmmakers, like, such an imaginative... It really requires creative people on both ends.
Right.
There are, Face Off and all of these embracing of the horror genre as, like, something that people are super into, whether it's watching makeup and special effects artists do their thing, or it's, like, putting latex on someone and making them look disgusting, and it's awesome. I mean, a lot of... And there's all these subgenres of, like, there's creature features, there's vampires, there's zombie movies, there's werewolf movies, there's all these things that have come out of it, and, like...
Right.
It's interesting what people find as scary, and, like, what they find as funny, and what makes a good horror story or movie or idea, even.
And usually in horror, I think the good ones do rise to the top. Mm-hmm. Even in the low-budget movies, there are still ones like Dog Soldiers that will rise to the top because of their production value, because they, you know, they used real suits, but things like that. But and in the Shaun of the Dead, which was basically, that was done pretty much on a tight budget as well. And it wasn't a super huge budget film by any means. And then things like Paranormal Activity, things that come back up to kind of redefine the genre and come up. They're not going to, again, win any Oscars, but who gives a shit, you know? But,
well, then there's movies like Let Me In, which I've never seen the original, but that movie, like, the thing that was scary about it wasn't the vampire, you know? It was all the other shit that was scary, and it was scary, like, things like that. I'm interested to, when we start talking about it, I need to watch it. I'm interested to find out from you guys, like, what is it, what are some of those movies or stories when you were a kid that, like, scared the shit out of you, and then what has changed, and now, like, what was the last movie that you actually jumped at, you know? I want to know.
Well, that's actually an interesting point, because scary stuff specifically, you're not supposed to expose kids to. I mean, everybody gets exposed to something scary before they're supposed to, but...
My father made me watch The Exorcist when I was 3 years old.
He made you... What?
Yeah, and the Howling movies.
What? What do you mean he made you watch it?
Or I
he
was sat just on watching his lap, and he made me watch it, and I wasn't... Like every time something was scary...
One of your earliest memories as a human being is watching one of the scariest movies of all
and
time.
And pointing at the screen and laughing at it. Like, well, of course, he was very much about, I don't want her to be scared of anything. I think he really wanted a boy. Sorry, Dad. Mm. But... I remember sitting there, and during the Howling more, like, the Howling movies, we would sit there, and we would point at the TV screen whenever something happened that was, I'm putting quotes around this, scary, and we would laugh at it, so that, because he's like, that's not scary, look how not scary that is. So the creature
your dad
stuff,
wanted to watch horror movies so bad that he did all this just so he could sit there and watch it with you. Rather than put you to bed like a responsible adult and watch it later. He was like, fuck that.
I've had to wean my kid in. She's terrified of movies. So I've had to wean her into watching certain movies.
Yeah.
And then we do talk a lot about the special effects and what's happening there and why it's scary.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened to me. I was terrified of movies before. I was terrified of things. Friday the 13th, The Exorcist, they're just absolutely terrifying to me. Until I was in high school and I started reading Fangoria magazine. And I got to see how they put all these things together. Then I started really, really get into, I would love to work on a movie set. I would love to do special effects makeup work. And I would love to create these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And do the stories. And then I really got into horror at that point. But before then, I was terrified. And, it just kind of stick. And I still like to be scared. And I really want to be scared at certain movies. So that's why I get disappointed sometimes when they're, you know, I'm all for laughing and I'm all for going, oh my God, that was great. They just blew this dude's stomach out. But I really like
if you like everything about the genre, I mean, if you like the idea of making it and appreciating when somebody does it well, you can watch a bad or a failed or, you know, not great horror movie and at least appreciate the effort that went into it. Or, you know, maybe the acting is horrible, but
maybe the music is...
But the makeup is fantastic.
Or the story,
you know?
I mean...
Yeah.
Or the story,
I would say Rambok was one that I recently watched. It was a Norwegian film, kind of a zombie-ish film.
Rambok?
Rambok. You can get it on Netflix streaming. And the story was great. It's just a little basically apartment complex, and everybody starts, their zombie stuff comes in the courtyard, of course, and then a few people get killed, but then they...
Ooh, that movie's gory, too, right? They go all the way up and...
Kind of, yeah. It's not super gory. It's just... And it's almost like The Walking Dead, where it doesn't really focus on the zombies. You only see the zombies in a few scenes. It focuses on the people that are in the apartment complex trying to get and help the other people in the apartment complex.
But they're not even good. Like, none of those people were, quotes again, good people, right? These are, like, drug dealers trying to bust each other? No? Okay, no. Different movie.
There's
a
dude that was waiting for his girlfriend. Yeah, it's a probably different movie. But check that out. It's all in the story.
I remember watching, what was it? The Nightmare on Elm Street on HBO in my parents' bedroom with the sound turned down. I wanted to see what was happening. But I just literally, as soon as something scary started happening, I just turned the sound down. I breathed a sigh of relief, and then I just made it through the rest of the movie. And I have no idea what even happened in that movie. But I just know that something, it was like too scary for me when I was 13 or 14.
That's awesome. I remember watching Pet Sematary and Candyman with blanket over my head in the fourth bedroom, like, way after I shouldn't have been, you know, like, lights off in the whole house. I sneak in, and things that scared me the most weren't, like, you know, the dead things coming back. It was the memory of her sister when she's like, Rachel, in the other room. Like, that's, how crazy is that? But I read all those books, too.
Yeah.
All the Stephen King books and all the Dean Koontz books, so it was like... Anyway, I'm sorry, Eric.
Oh no, I was gonna say, you know, I had really high anxiety as a child. Like, I'm like, loud noises scared the shit out of me. Like, I was, there was like, they even had a thing where, like, in elementary school, if they were planning a fire drill, they had to, like, let me know ahead of time, because it would seriously, the loud noise would scare the crap out of me. And like, what I was thinking about, you know, what is one of the things that we market to children the most? I mean, Halloween. I mean, seriously, I mean, we market that, and so I think we introduce children to that element very early on. And I remember I was a very imaginative child when I was little. I have memories that I can't remember if they were dreams or just my imagination, you know, or whatever, or what they were of imagining just like monsters, you know, like at the store or something like that. And so as I got a little bit older, when I was like, you know, seven or so, my grandma would like go to the grocery store, and we'd be like at the video section. She would be renting movies, and I would sit there and I would stare at all the gory pictures on like the horror films, and I was scared of them. I was scared to watch them, especially because of like the stingers and the loud noises and that sort of thing. But I had this morbid fascination with them at the same time. It was sort of a daring thing in a way.
I kind of got on it on the bandwagon too, and I remember this because of a lot of horror movies. They got boobies. A lot of sex and tits.
That's
which
awesome.
They don't have anymore. You know, I'm really disappointed they don't have as much blatant teenage sex in there. But The Howling was one you mentioned. I read that book. I remember reading the book, and the book was like, you know, I was a young teenager. I was like, wow, there's that.
Whoa.
The sex scene by the fire, and that really kind of did it for me. And then watching the movie, it was the same way. And then like Friday 13th, I ended up watching that. There's plenty of boobs in there, and I was like, I like this blood, boobs. Scary stuff. I'm in.
Ow.
Give it to me. And so that was and then things like Hellraiser came, and you know, those kind of movies, and
they just, when you're young like that, it like blows your mind, because you're like, what? Mm-hmm. What is with his face? What is with that guy's face? What's wrong with the dog?
And
what
it could possibly
on?
Be real, you know, like another dimension could be real. And you know, the same with The Exorcist. You know, that could possibly really happen.
Oh my god!
You know?
Well, and I think going back to this, I feel like I have to defend my insane father. But in addition to pointing and laughing, he was always like, "Oh, I bet they used whatever to make that blood. I bet they did this to do that." So he was always trying to get me to think about it in a different way.
Think about it as a creative.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
Creation, that it was a neat, you know, it's a somebody's neat idea that they brought to fruition. Rather than just something truly horrible to bring into the darkest pit of your soul.
My 16-year-old,
like,
I remember when
on.
It switched. You know, she was terrified of scary movies, and I remember when it switched, and now Maggie is all about scary movies. She really likes them, and it's totally, you know, we all watch, you know, Face Off as a family.
Right.
But Kendall's still pretty terrified. And part of me is okay with that, because also I used to terrify them as children. And I didn't do it that your dad did. I would actually put on masks and sneak in the dark.
That's,
you know,
fucking mean.
The chainsaw.
Awesome.
And I would just, as much as I could, I'd you know, turn into a zombie and I'd chase them around the house until they cried. So wow. Halloween was...
Be good or the zombie will wake you up and eat your brains.
Again, yeah. Wow. They knew the month of October was like hell month. There was 31 days of terror at my house.
That
because
is so funny.
As much as I could for 30 days... I would terrify them at any given point. You never know what was going
to
happen.
If you need to use my baby monitor ever, I always, like, sometimes, mostly on Halloween, you know, I'll put the thing out there and play music from a room in the house so that it's, like, in the bushes, like, some screaming or whatever. If you ever need to borrow it and put it in their rooms to freak them the fuck out, you let me know.
Oh, well, you know, Maggie's, you know, what she saw in the city is I could do something like that. Just leave it there.
Yeah.
My grandpa used to do this really creepy thing where he would take his lower dentures and pop them out of his mouth and chase it. Yeah, it was yeah. So
I just watched Ed Wood the other day.
Yeah.
There's that great scene where some trick-or-treaters come to Bela Lugosi's house and he does the big vampire thing with his cape. And they're not scared, so Ed Wood pops his dentures out and they run away screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, Nosferatu is one of those for me that when I watched it the very first time, it was like one of the most beautiful... movies in the universe, and then I watched pretty quickly after I saw it the first time. I watched the movie with Willem Dafoe,
Shadow of the Vampire.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
And it was so cool to see somebody's take on what Nosferatu was, and then to go back and watch it again with some stupid music that they put in and that like took the place of the old school music. I was so disappointed, but music has been such a huge for me anyway. I collect all these soundtracks and like. The first time you watch The Thing and Ennio Morricone's music that's just like pushing the button, like the 10th thing. Oh God, it's stuff like that that can make or break.
I just noticed that Bear McCreary does the music for The Walking Dead.
And Terminator and also, yes, I love him so much. I love Bear McCreary, I love him. I love it.
I actually remember what it was. I think that I saw The Illness as a child that probably like influenced my nightmares for years to come. It was the music video to Thriller because I saw it when I was 2 years old.
Oh,
and, like,
wow, really?
Because I had these like teenage like aunts and uncles who would watch MTV all the time, and I was really young. And I saw
actually, yeah, I mean that was quite early exposure. I had never seen a zombie movie. Yeah. I hadn't seen Night of the Living Dead before the Thriller video came out.
Really?
I don't think I'd seen maybe. I've had some Teen Wolf
movies.
Teen Wolf! There's the werewolf part of it, but...
Yeah. But
Teen
I had nightmares about zombies all the time
the
after
extent,
that.
The whole 16-minute long version of that video. It's
really
pretty,
didn't
it's pretty
give me
badass.
Also, the thing was that when I was young, I was terrified of zombies. And I'm way into zombie culture, you might say. But that was the one thing I was terrified the most of, besides
terrified of the
demonic possession.
The idea of a zombie apocalypse?
Yeah. Well, I used to have dreams that the Slea Stack were outside
stack.
Of my house.
Oh,
and they were
the
just waiting,
stack.
And they're whole the way they move.
I don't know what that is.
That's from Land of the Lost. The Slea Stack.
Okay.
Never mind.
It was a Saturday morning.
Yeah. They were just terrifying.
Live action.
I've seen the radio. Like, I've seen a theater company perform the radio version of Land of the Lost, but I was more concerned with, like, they used umbrellas to just show the pterodactyl wings flying over. That's fucking cool. I didn't really pay attention to the story. It was, like, live Foley in front of me, and that's all I paid attention to.
I actually like the Will Ferrell version of Land of the Lost,
too.
I
thought it was
pretty
awful.
Oh, I think it's funny, but but Slea Stack scared me, and then zombies terrified me to death. I mean, I couldn't cope with zombies just because of the whole coming up from the grave thing. And then when the Thriller thing came out, then they were really good looking ones.
Did you watch Buffy when you were
came
out?
Yeah.
I never took zombies seriously because the first zombie movie I saw was Return of the Living Dead.
Oh yeah, which I loved.
It was really fun.
That got me over the fear of zombies. It started to get me over my fear of zombies because
it was very tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, you know, and that's a big thing. A lot of horror is like that. It's sort of, you know, they're not even necessarily trying to scare you so much as just sort of reveling in the trappings of it. Just, you know, like getting excited about Halloween. You know, it's just the gore moments are, you know, they're not really there to horrify you so much as it's just everybody enjoying.
I think in general,
the trappings of horror, you know?
And in general, when they pull off and they execute horror movies nowadays, it's really, I think it's really easy for us to sit back and go, well, they should have done this or they should have done that. But I do blame a lot of producers and writers for not actually sitting back and taking a look at their final product and what is really scary. I think the the production companies and the movie companies really, they've reined in horror because either A, it's going to be so gory and out there that it's out there, and the story suffers for it, or it just can't be a good combination of both when it comes down to what's going to scare you. Insidious kind of tried it, and they failed miserably.
They had
hate
me.
That movie.
They had me up until they went into, like, Freddy Dreamland.
Exactly.
Oh, so, my God.
See,
it was gorgeous
they
until they
know,
went up into that.
They didn't do... Well,
see, what's interesting is the Dreamland looked exactly like my nightmares when I was a kid. So
it was like
so
Freddy.
It
was so over
how,
the top.
How often does that happen, though, with a horror movie? Like, the setup, the premise, the first 20 minutes are all good, and then it just gets derailed.
It was like the first
point,
hour,
right?
Though. I mean, when she's looking up and she sees that thing, and you see her seeing that thing,
yeah.
And she, oh, my God.
I mean, if
God,
you make it an hour into a horror movie and you're with it that long... That's almost a success. How can it?
Mm-hmm.
How can it all go so wrong? In
because
the last
they,
final
you know,
act?
They're not setting back and looking. Like nowadays, you can go on the computer and you can pull up ghost videos, and it, you know it's real. You know, they open the door and he goes. When he opens the door again, there's this fucking kid shadow and like really terrifying, but really scares people now. It's not the blood and the guts. It's definitely it's more real. That's why the. You know, the last Paranormal Activity movie with that, when they had the fan rotating that built
so
up so
cool.
much tension. That was the last horror movie that I saw that was the only one for years that I didn't see the ending almost. Because when she went up to the girl at the end, and you know, they've done this, you don't know what you're going to see every time it pulls around. And it was so awesome how they did that. You didn't know what you're going to see. And now at the end, they built up so much tension that you know what's going to happen. You know the girl's sitting there. You see her back, and you're coming up behind her, and he's reaching out. Classic segment. And I know for the fact they're going to turn around, they're going to shock me and scare me, and the girl's going to have a fucked up face. I know this. And yet I have... That was a time I'm looking through my fingers, going, nope. And then I'm like, nope, fuck it, I'm not watching. And I came up, and then I watched, and I looked at Laura, I go, what'd your face look like? She's like, I don't know, I got my hands closed. I didn't look. I still don't know what that face looked like there, because I was so tense already from all those crazy scenes that they had in that movie. And to me, that's what's scary. What's scary is to have something behind you that you don't know about, and then you turn around and it's not there, or, you know, a chair rocking by itself, or, you know, the thought of a horde of zombies coming and what it would feel like to be ripped apart and bitten and eaten and chewed up, knowing you can't get away, knowing that it could be your daughter, your friend that's doing it. That's what's scary. Vampires, knowing you don't have any ability to get away from them.
So the more, I mean, there's the more serious the tone is, if the story takes place, it takes itself completely seriously, and it feels like something that could really happen. That to me is like the scariest possible.
Yeah. One, a lot of what you were talking about actually does tie into the three types of horror thing that I was going to talk about. My boyfriend Eric GL got this from his he's a big fan of Orson Scott Card, who was reading some stories, and there was a thing that he was telling me about in this, and I really made sense to me, and it sort of ties into what I believe too. There is the three types of fear, major types of fear. There's terror, horror, and dread. And terror, the first type is the most immediate, but it doesn't linger as much as the other two do. Terror is the immediate, like, fear,
fight or flight kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for instance, a good example of terror is used in suspense movies a lot. Like, I mean, like the movie Jaws has a ton of terrifying moments in it. It's terror. You know, the shark coming at you, huge teeth. You know, it's just that type of fight or flight sort of moment. And that's used a lot, I think, in a lot of, like, slasher movies have terror and that sort of thing. It's just, it's the fear of one's, you know, life.
Being chased by the maniac,
right.
And it's right behind you and you're running down through
the
forest.
I have a lot of chase dreams.
Yeah.
A lot.
And so terror is a very immediate and acute fear. Did I just say fearer? Yes, I did say fearer.
Fearor.
Yes.
Fearor.
The fearer.
And terror is good in the moment, but it doesn't necessarily linger with people that much. Horror, the second type of fear, it is the haunting after effect. It's more of a psychological thing that deals...
PTSD.
Yes, and it's, I think horror, we get that a lot from... I think we get that a lot from gore and just from things that just like just really freak us out. And
that's where you can bring in repulsion.
Yeah, repulsion.
That could be the barf or not to barf moment.
The first time that I watched Paranormal Activity in my basement, because I have surround sound down there, And it's like, you turn it off, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to bed now. And yeah. then you hear every single noise in your house that you've never heard before.
Yeah.
That.
Horror lingers with you, and it's... And I also think there's different types of horror, too. There's you know, the psychological horror of just like, oh my God, that shouldn't be kind of thing. But I also think there's emotional horror, too. I think a good example of emotional horror is the movie The Fly from the 1980s, because Gina Davis's character in that... Essentially, what you see in that movie is this woman watching somebody she loves like suffer this fate that's like way worse than death, and she can't fucking do anything about it.
Right.
And I mean, there's a really good scene in that where she like comes to say goodbye to him for the last time, and like just her acting performance in that is like it's emotionally horrifying, because you try to put yourself in that situation and it's just like, you know, it's like, it does not compute kind of thing. You know,
there's more emotions involved in that than there is, say, in Terror, where it's like
yes.
one emotion.
Yeah,
horror has everything. You just don't know how to place it all together in that.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of horror films and the horror genre, there's plenty of horror to go around, and there's plenty of terror. But I think the key type of fear that is missing from a lot of horror movies that don't necessarily make them, you know, the ones that sort of separate the, you know, make the cream rise to the top or whatever, is dread. Dread is the most powerful fear. It is the fear of the unknown.
Oh,
it
that's
is...
the Paranormal Activity turn off.
Okay, well, okay,
right?
Yeah, it's. I think both kind of fit factor into that. But dread
okay.
is the interesting thing about horror is that in each medium, you need to use different tactics, because you know, a lot of times in books people's imaginations can go wild in books. Film. You have to. I think you have to shoot horror in a certain way, because what you don't like, just teasing the audience with like little things, little glimpses of things. The thing behind your shoulder, where did it go? Creates, you know, what you don't see, because anything that people's imaginations can come up with is going to be way scarier than what you actually fully show them.
Exactly. That's what they don't do enough,
yeah.
I think. And the dread also leads into suspense.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
that's where the Paranormal Activity thing, where you know something fucked up is going to happen,
yeah.
and that camera pans,
yeah.
or the camera's just sitting there static, and she's talking, and you know
when it's
that there's nothing happening, yeah,
yeah.
and they're there.
Yeah.
You could feel that dread, and you
mm-hmm.
know something's going to happen. You're waiting for it,
yeah.
And then usually they get you with a bang,
yeah.
and that's the terror.
Yeah, dread is the thing that creates that atmosphere of edge of the seat. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And you don't know what
right.
the hell is going to happen. I think the best horror, anything, effectively uses all three types of fear
mm-hmm.
in the right places.
Because they were saying that in, like, when they showed The Exorcist, talk about horror, that you know, the people were leaving the theaters, and throwing up in the lobby and things like that. They just couldn't deal with it. They never seen anything like that before. And I think that's, you know, whether it's gore or whatnot. But gore, I think, does that. That's the shock value. It was so repulsive. And it's not
yeah.
terror. You're not terrified to see somebody just get split in half by zombies, but
right.
you're horrified. You're gut-wrenching, horrifying. And then knowing that you're walking down the hallway and behind any door could be a certain thing is the dread. So I think you nailed it with the three
totally.
Type
yeah.
of feelings you have to get. And I think a good horror movie has all of them.
Yeah.
yeah.
And they use them in a way that, again, the best way to do it is to let the audience
mm-hmm.
fill in their heads. So somebody goes by, you know, the camera pans by
yeah.
and doesn't focus on that little body that's sitting there and just kind of la la la, like they did that in Insidious too. You walk through and you see the little kid that was sitting there. And I knew, what the hell? And you see him later as if it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
You let your mind fill in all those things, and it can be even more terrifying.
Yeah.
Ghost stories have always been... I mean, scary stories to tell in the dark. When I was a kid, like, I think my name was in that book in the Edison Elementary School library more than any other kids.
Mm.
And I think I read every single Dean Koontz book in high school that I could, and Stephen King, and I'm finishing 20,000, whatever it is, Richard Matheson, who wrote a ton of Twilight Zone episodes, and I Am Legend and Stir of Echoes and all these things. But I'm going to sound a little crazy, but I'm going to say it. I've always believed that our brains can't fully process every single thing that's in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when our third eye is like just about to open a little bit more and we perceive something, that's when I think dread sort of kicks in for people, and a lot of people have made up words like ghosts or paranormal whatever to explain some of those feelings that we're not able to articulate, like hearing some sort of whisper when you know nothing's there, feeling like there's something else in the room with you, even though there's not. Like, all of those things that every single one of us feels sometimes and we don't know how to talk about it, or it lasts, like, less than a second and then it's gone, so we dismiss it. All of those things, I have no idea what the fuck that is. I just know that it's my brain trying to perceive something that I can't perceive. So, when we first moved into this house that we're in right now, there's a closet downstairs in the basement. And when I'm looking at it the first time, it was just me and the realtor, and I opened the door to the closet, and immediately I was like, I wanted to cry. And there was no reason at all, and I was not in my lady time. I'm not crazy. It was one of those, like, holy, something bad. And I didn't know how to explain it, and, like, we were walking through again, and I opened the door, and I, like, looked closely, and at the bottom of the door was, like, clawed to shit, like they had kept a dog or something in there. And it was... it's still, like, I can't open the door downstairs without feeling awful. And Riley's pretty convinced that there's some sort of... like, Kitty plays with something in the basement that ain't fucking there. She'll just go crazy and play with something that's not there. And I'm pretty sure in the last house we lived in, like, I could hear... you know, who knows? Who knows what these things are? But it's things that make people afraid. And, like, ghost stories, like Poltergeist... you know, fear came out when I was like really? Five. It's all of those things that we're not able to perceive and that we give names to that have freaked me the fuck out since I was little. So things like Poltergeist and the ghost stories, but then it's also like the things that are government and things that a large group of people might be working on that are of the unknown, like Dean Koontz Watchers, where there's like creatures made in labs, and like The Hills Have Eyes. And things like that have always freaked me out. Because you're like, hillbillies. Oh my god! Yeah. Well, but they weren't scary hillbillies until man fucked with things they shouldn't have fucked with.
No, I think it was the hillbillies that were doing the fucking.
That just sounded really fun. I'm just saying, they were altered by something that was man-made. And then...
were they? The Hills Have Eyes?
It was the radiation
thing. It was the radiation thing. From the whole nuclear tests, yeah.
It's always been stuff like that that freaks me out, too. But
the whole kidnapping and all that.
Well, yeah, and the rape and the whatever. Yeah, that's all bad. Eating. It's just... it stemmed from...
eating of human flesh.
And that dude with the head and the chair. I've never loved a dog so much, but still.
I think what makes... a good scary horror film, I think, is the balance between the three fears. I think dread is the most important thing. Horror, obviously, you need horror there for it to, I think, fit to be a horror film. But I think what always makes best for me is using terror, the most minimal out of the three, simply because if you build the atmosphere with dread and horror, then those short moments of terror will really hone in on you and really freak you out.
Right.
And so.
That part where that dude rips his face off in Poltergeist lasts for like a second, you know, and then you think everything's okay, and then the shit hits the fan. Like, oh, have you seen that movie? Have you seen Poltergeist?
Poltergeist, actually, yeah, that's one of the formative, early horror.
It was. It had a very interesting visual of the unknown. Actually, Poltergeist did. It created a very unique.
It had an oddly family friendly tone for a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like something really scary is going to happen here, but. Well, nothing. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe just because I would watch it when I got home from school when I was like in eighth grade or whatever.
I think it had a good use of emotional horror from the mother's standpoint too, the parent's standpoint. But anyway,
if anybody hasn't watched The Dead Hour, it's sort of its own unique web horror show.
Yeah.
Made right
short
here
stories,
in Omaha, Nebraska.
Basically.
They're in their second Omaha season. Crew. It's good stuff. It's really good stuff. And they have different kinds of episodes to fit different people's horror.
There's short films on the web?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like 15 minutes.
That's
and
cool.
And it's all opened with DJ Raven on her radio show. Kind of, it's like her unraveling the story for the audience. So it starts out with her welcoming you back to the show and starting this story.
She's like the character, like... Rod Serling was, or the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
Or what's the Showtime one? David Duchovny walking down the highway.
Oh,
there was some
Hitcher.
The Hitcher. Well, no, not the Hitcher. I can't remember what it's called now. No, the Red Shoe Diaries. Maybe that's what it was. Never mind.
The what diaries?
The red. There was something where he was like the host of the show, just sort of, you know, the intro and outro of every little episode.
Right on. Dead Hour.
So yeah, The Dead Hour is pretty good. You should check that out. And that, they do a lot of, like you said, they try and cover all the bases. So there are some ones that have some decent gore in there, but the other ones can be just quirky, suspenseful stories or whatnot. So that's
like funny, you know, oddly ironic vampire bits, things, you know. There's good ones on there.
You know, when we first talked about doing this, I was kind of like, oh, I'm not really that much of a horror guy. But the more I think about it, I mean, some of my favorite movies have pretty much just been horrors. But I don't know if it's because kind of growing up in the 80s where the slasher genre was so prevalent, that's what kind of turned me off. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that some crazy person with a sharp implement is just killing people left and right.
We're waiting.
Didn't ever capture my imagination very much, you know? It's just, you know, if there's something supernatural or I don't know.
That's like why after the, you know, back in the late 90s or whatever, I was kind of turned off. I mean, even though, you know, I was kind of turned off by the reemergence of the slasher thing with the Scream and all that. But I actually kind of turned back into horror when The Ring came out, because it was the first thing that created a sense of dread within me in a long time. And so,
right.
When I left the movie theater after watching that, I don't know why this is not logical, but I went to see it at the theater, and I'm walking to my car, and I called my mother. And it's like 11 p.m., okay? And I called my mother, and I wouldn't walk by, like, the storm drains. It has nothing to do with that. But I'm like, Mom, you need to talk to me until I get home. Because it freaked me out, and I didn't know, I couldn't articulate why, and then I bought the DVD as soon as it came out, and when you get to the menu of the Ring DVD, and you're flipping through it, all of a sudden the cursor isn't there, and I pushed play, and the movie started, and I flipped the fuck out, and I turned the TV off, and I was like, no! And it was so, there's no logical explanation.
At least it was DVD and not VHS you were watching.
Oh, I know, that's how it works,
I actually had a friend who, 7 days after I saw The Ring, watched it late at night and called me 1 a.m. and went, 7 days?
Get
and
out! Phone.
I was like, stop!
My friend had that same cell phone, and we were both watching it, and I remember looking at him, he had the same cell phone as they used in the movie, and then I remember us going, so should we watch the film? You want to watch that short film? No, I'm not gonna do it. And we didn't. Two grown adults are just like, nah, I'm not watching that.
Who's the guy who played your father, who was in the X-Men movies?
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox,
yeah,
and
Brian
Naomi
Cox
Watts.
Awesome.
Like, the fact that they had serious...
They were good actors.
...actors in the movie made it...
Yeah.
I think it made it more relatable for me.
It's always interesting to go back and look at some of the, the originals, like the original Grudge and the original Ring.
Yeah.
And Ringu. And when you're talking about... kind of resurgences in like the slasher films. I was always more of, I really loved vampire from the werewolf. Mm-hmm. I always want to be a werewolf. If I can ever get the chance, I will be. Sorry. I'll probably end up killing my family, but that's okay. But
they'll build you a cage.
Yeah. But when we're getting into all the movies, what I think they've been able to do now within the last 10 years has really been able to beef up the horror genre with movies like we were talking about, with like movies like The Ring or remakes, Let Me In, Shaun of the Dead kind of stuff, and then a lot of television stuff too. Being Human takes all three and puts them all together and is really well written, both the UK version and the US version, and I would suggest going back and watching both of them. It's like a parallel universe. The UK version, sometimes you would say, God, that's so well written. It's better
French
than American. Oh, no, than the American. But they're totally different stories. You're not going to get any kind of spoilers by watching the UK version. But it's really well written. And then I think that's when people are really starting to get what an audience needs out of horror.
Yeah.
They're able to write them really well and give you every aspect of that. Not overall, so freaked out, I want to run out in the lobby. But
yeah.
But really, the TV stuff that they're coming up with, and that's banning the whole, I don't know if you guys talked about the whole Sci-Fi Channel originals.
Sci-Fi.
Banning all those, but I mean, but coming back into, and how they're really producing, in The Walking Dead 2, it's an AMC, it's a television series, so some of those are really giving, I think, the writers and the directors and the producers a way to bring in horror into a mainstream audience that... Because if they don't, because it's a series, if they don't do good, good writing,
right?
Same with like Game of Thrones. If that was poorly written and it was written like schlocky, sci-fi yeah. schlocky,
right.
You wouldn't have the dedicated hardcore audience.
You can get away more with schlock in a film than you can in a series, I think, because
sure.
in a film you've done it, it's done, you know.
You're not
going
to rewatch it.
Numbers,
yeah. So
I remember because I'm such a horror literature fan, the one story that actually made me like take the book and throw it across the room after I read the last line was Stephen King's Survivor Type. It's one of his short stories.
I haven't read that one. I'll have to read that.
Oh my god. I was probably like 13 or something when I read it the first time. I'm like in bed and it's late at night and I read the very last line, which is the last word of the story is Lady Fingers, and I like, oh my god. I took the book and chucked it across the room and like covered up my head and did not sleep.
Because you were scared?
Yes, because I was scared. I mean, the intro, and we'll talk about this more in our next episode, but the intro to this Richard Matheson short story book I'm reading is basically Stephen King wrote the intro saying Richard Matheson is the king of all things horror literature because every story you read, you want more, and every story you read makes your mind go insane, and I'm trying to take the ball that he like got rolling and keep going with it, and he's been really smart about taking some of his pieces and putting them into like graphic novel form. You know, I mean, The Stand isn't really horror. I would call that more fantasy. I mean, the second half of the book is more fantasy. Mm-hmm. The first half of the book is let's wipe out the human race because of a disease, and that's kind of horrifying. But taking out, like, The Stand and the gunslinger stuff, and the gunslinger's more fantasy, I think, too. But
yeah.
taking it and putting it into this graphic novel thing is very cool. And writers, I mean, just standard writers are realizing that like books are going more toward the nook to the short story, like people's attention spans are
right.
getting shorter because there's all these other things happening and they're smart by going to graphic novel or
well and graphic novels can
else.
Be graphic. I mean, you look at Walking Dead and those
mm-hmm.
were they're
mm-hmm.
kind of horrifying to read.
They're
and
awesome,
the artwork and everything, you know, the chopped off heads of the little girls and it's
the
like
bike
that.
Even the bike the first
girls,
episode I like
great.
Had the thing in my hand and I was going page by page.
I think that I read like the foreword in my first like volume one of the Walking Dead comic. Robert Kirkman says, you know, I loved zombie movies and I always hated when they got to the end because I always wanted to know what happened next.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in the movies basically all the characters are killed off by the end of the movie, but you know occasionally there's a couple survivors that get away
right.
and you know. There's more horror right around the corner for them. You want to know what happens to them. What happens to society? What happens a few months down the road? What happens several years down the road?
But
you know, does anybody live long enough to build a life in this horrible world?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I always felt that too. That's what I loved about zombie movies is just the premise, the horrible premise or the idea is so intriguing. You want to know, you know, what happens or you want to just more detail about the circumstances about it or you know what's going to happen next. You don't get that from a slasher movie. You know, the slasher dies and then the horror is over.
Or is it?
Or but you know like the thing.
I don't know, Jason could be in space.
Actually I recently I caught the end of Jason Goes to Hell and I thought to myself, how did we get from the first Friday the 13th movie to this moment?
Oh my god.
So we're going to have him on the show. We're going to have Ari on the show. He was the boy that comes up and grabs Adrian King.
Okay.
Adrian King, I think, is going to also be on the show, too. But,
any of those
yeah.
slasher
is
movies.
It, but is that a good sign of a good horror story? Is that there's more that's going to happen? That there's like a teaser at the end? You know, like at the end of each of the Omen movies, you know, Damien's going to get into some more bad shit. And, you know. Even though I guess he gets killed off in the third one.
I don't think it necessarily has to be that, but so much as like, but I do like it at the end when it just leaves you with this unsettled or unresolved feeling. It doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, that, oh, they're sitting, you know, there's more or there or whatever. It's just, it should leave you with some, I don't know, some feeling that it's the after effects of the horror. It should
good
leave
point,
you with
yeah, the,
yeah.
That unsettled feeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, the slasher
wrap up really nicely, like it did in in the Grindhouse film, Planet Terror. She's riding on the horse in Mexico.
I wanted to know more about...
They're all utopian society now. It's so great, you know. That's kind of what everybody wants.
I must not have made it to the end of Planet Terror.
Or like the remake of Dawn of the Dead, and they get to the island. And sometimes you really just want to have an island. Is it too much to ask that we just...
I want to know what happened on that island. I want to know, do they rebuild society?
They all fucking died.
Yeah. Much.
That, the new Dawn of the Dead, speaking of that, like... That movie and 28 Days Later and movies like that where it's so much about the human beings and the way that they treat each other amidst the whole thing, those to me, like, those are the best zombie movies.
That's the worst, like, The Road and whatnot. But I mean, when you come out of horror, part of zombie movies like that or an apocalyptic type of deal is I always think that the... No problem taking out zombies. I'm fine with that. You know what's hard?
It's the other living people.
The Walking Dead. Yeah, it's
the real problem. Yeah.
The tension you felt on the last episode of The Walking Dead when they had those two guys that come in and were like, hey, you know.
That guy was in True Blood. Yeah. He was so good. Yeah.
Like that tension, you know. Oh, come on, dude, just shoot him because it's not going to end well.
So
it's not
going
to be good. And so that's the kind of tension that I think it was genius that they put that in there.
Barroom shootout in a really zombie cool. show.
That's, yeah, one of the best scenes of that series so far.
Yeah,
because
you knew, and then you were so relieved that, oh, great, they finally...
As far as, like, just emotional horror and stuff, the end of the mid-season, this past mid-season, with just, it just, that to me was just a very, like, just devastating scene in Walking Dead with the barn.
Yeah, totally. So.
Oh, that totally caught me off guard, because I'd read the comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew there had already been deviation from... which characters live and which characters die or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But is it Jesse? Sophia.
Sophia. Yeah.
Sophia's still alive in the comics.
Is she? Okay.
Yeah.
It just
totally caught me off
guard. It was horrifying because that was the driving force that was keeping them going.
I believed it so much because all of them believed it, you know? Yeah. I didn't even think about it. I honestly didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I have a problem with the writers totally going 360 with the graphic novel.
Mm.
I hate it when movies do that. I really hate it when you have a movie and then they just take it and completely revamp it because of the way it's supposed to be.
But you were just saying you appreciate the parallel universe nature of the two series.
Well, see, and I haven't read
it. I do. I do appreciate that.
So that's the same sort of
kind of, but it's already it was already a television series. Yeah, and if I was a huge fan of the UK version, I started.
But I know
the U.S. version, it's kind of like they were thinking about making a Doctor, or they were thinking about making Sherlock as a U.S. version, which...
How would that even work?
That was so stupid.
No,
but
thank you.
Whenever there's deviation in the Game of Thrones TV series, I get
slightly outraged
because, I want that pure original version not to be tarnished.
You think that it should be...
But it's not tarnished because it exists. You know what I mean? I mean, the comic version is there. It's not like... They're going to go back and rewrite the comic because they changed the TV show.
It's not what I mean. If they've done that on fantasy movies in particular, where they've taken the, you know, they've completely only kept the name in it, just to get people, and it's like they're treating us like idiots. Like we've read it. You know, Stephen King. You know, a lot of people like Stephen King. You know, the movies come out and the writers write it. It's like we are fans. We're going to go to see that movie because we are Stephen King fans. We're fans of the book.
I Am Legend is the perfect example of that. Like the Will Smith version.
Yeah.
The book is so ahead of its time.
Well, it was a Will Smith movie. It's maybe one of the best Will Smith movies, but it's still, I mean, Will Smith is going to take the seed of a great idea and turn it into a thing where he's just like a movie star.
Work out with his shirt off.
Yeah. See, and the guy in Matheson's original story is like, this overweight schmuck who can't fucking deal with the fact that at night all of his neighbors and friends are outside of his house screaming his names to come out so they can make him like him. So he drinks as much scotch as he possibly can and puts on every record that he owns at blasting volume so he can drown it out.
That aspect of it exists more in Omega Man, the Charlton Heston
version. Yeah. I mean, and it's very Matheson. Like, his stories all have this very cool... fucked up tangential brain thing.
I want to find out what everybody's favorite horror movie. What's your favorite horror movie? The one that affected you the most, or your favorite one, or a very significant horror film.
Putting me on the spot. There's too many to choose from.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'm gonna say Aliens because when I was a kid, not only could I relate to like Newt because the whole, you know, I was her age when I saw it probably the first time, 1984 or something like that, it came out. But then as I got older, it was like Ripley fighting with the representative for who sent her there.
Paul
like,
Reiser.
Thank you. That he was like representative of the government and they wanted to do something.
Corporation.
With exact. Thank you. And that she was like, no, I'm looking out for the human race. And scary, you can't reason with the thing. You can't, right. You know what I mean?
The first one or the second one? Okay.
I mean, the first one is fantastic and great, but the second one was more relatable for me.
It has, yeah.
Because it had the awesome. New thing, and it was like...
we're breaking into, like, is that sci-fi? Is that sci-fi or is it horror?
It scared it's the both. Fucking it's shit out of me.
There you go.
It's horror for me.
There you go.
All right, what's yours?
Well, okay, I do have... It's hard for me to pick a single favorite, but as far as one that probably influenced me the most as a child, and I know I've talked with you guys about this too, it's not necessarily... It's not necessarily a great horror film. There are elements of it that are good, and then there are elements of it that are terrible. The late 80s film Pumpkinhead.
Yes.
And the reason for that is... When I saw it as a child, it scared the crap out of me because I just saw this huge, you know, hulking demonic thing. And I was like, what, you know? And it became the boogeyman in my dreams for years to come because of the story that goes into the thing. It's this folklore tale about you know, somebody has killed this man's child and he finds this witch in the woods that conjures up, basically, she uses his blood and the blood of the child and pours it into this deformed... Yeah, it's Lance Henriksen. he is like the best element of that movie because he's a good actor. But they pour it into this corpse's mouth and it becomes the embodiment of his vengeance, but he starts experiencing remorse, and eventually you figure out that, I mean, he's the real victim here, the thing. I mean, then they have to kill... He has to kill himself for the thing to die.
Right.
And what haunts me at the end of it is that in the last scene you see the witch burying... his corpse in the same spot, like he is the next host body for it or whatever.
Right.
And so it freaked me out as a kid because I would have dreams about, like, I did something bad and this thing would be coming for me. You know, it was a moralistic kind of thing. And so it haunted me for a long time.
Nice.
So,
nice. Are you there yet, Wayne?
I think the one that I would say that was significant for me in my formation of loving the genre was Return of the Living Dead. I was in high school, and that's the one that combined what I was terrified of, which was zombies, with humor. And how hilarious it was to see the half-dogs coming alive, or when they hit the thing, and they had to cut his head off, and the body comes up and starts running around.
So you love that one because it made it okay to like horror, kind of?
It kind of eased my fear. Yeah, it made it okay to get... And, you know, that's when I was reading Fangoria, so there was a lot of stuff on that in there. So that was one that was a significant. It wasn't necessarily my favorite, nor was it the most scariest, of course, because that would always be like The Exorcist. That terrified the shit out of me, still does. But that was the significant one for me. That would be.
I just remembered when I saw that movie. I saw it at the Westroads movie theater, and they did like a premiere night where they had actors from the movie at the Westroads.
Really?
Like a friend of mine said, hey, I got passes to this thing. Do you want to go see it? So I saw it in the theater, and I wish I could remember. I mean, I didn't know anything about the movie. I didn't know who the people were involved or anything. I just remember there were like stars there, you know, like, or some of the actors. And it's what a weird, crappy little movie theater to have have that happen at.
What was the horror movies that played at the Indian Hills? That people used to walk out of all the time. They were like...
Walk out of? They have like a movie, a horror series?
It wasn't
thing
a series. It was like some crazy mad scientist guy hosting all these really awful horror clips.
Dr. Sanguinary?
No, this is like Indian Hills when it was still around. It was like...
Sanguinary's a long
time ago,
right?
It was like people eating St. Bernards and like awful, real, horrifying things and
like
people would leave.
Faces of Death.
It was Faces of Death. I went to those and I laughed a lot.
I've never seen Faces of Death. How real is it?
I only saw parts of them.
Is it a horror movie? Is it a fake horror or is it actual like a snuff film?
They're supposedly they were the ones when they started coming out and they were doing like they'd actually show the film reels of people getting shot or murdered or not murdered.
But were they staged or were they legit?
No, I mean they had some where they showed film footage of here's these people actually eating monkeys and
that was the premise of it.
This is a guy that lit himself on fire and it shows you, you know, what they clip out of the news, it shows you this guy lighting himself on fire.
Mm-hmm. I mean I knew that's what they were billing it as, but I didn't know if it was manufactured or if it was
legitimate. No, I think,
well, I think yes.
Some of it,
yes, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a little bit of both, right?
Mm-hmm. I think okay. There would be, yeah.
Sorry, what, right. Chuck, what was, what's we yours? Built up to
my,
this.
My favorite, and it, maybe it goes because, well, whatever. My favorite horror movie is the 1970s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
It's such a horrible... I mean, again, that feeds into my love of the idea, like apocalyptic stories, I love them.
Yeah.
So anything that has to do with the fate of humankind is forever altered. And then just what does it mean for the future of man? You know, what's going to happen after, well, you know, Donald Sutherland...
Funny. Yeah, fucking knows. That dad was terrifying, and that's where he brought up the dread. I think, not yeah. knowing that,
but the it's got. I almost said the thing is my favorite.
Yeah,
but they share the paranoia in common.
Love it.
Where it's just like thing, you don't man. Know. You know, if the people, your friends, your family are not your friends and family anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's to me is such a compelling horror.
I might have to retake that and say John Carpenter's The Thing. That was right there. It came out around the same time, and that's the one. Actually, I was scared for one, but also very intrigued on the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's a movie, and it's still one of my all time favorite monster movies. Like, it's not like a horror movie,
it's
a creature movie. That is probably my all time one. And the awesome thing is what I would suggest people do is go watch that. And then go immediately watch the remake.
Yeah, well, it's not a remake. It's the prequel, right?
Yeah, it's the prequel. So actually you can watch... Yeah, that's right. It's a prequel.
I always wanted to know what had happened.
They actually do a great job of pulling in very tiny details into it that when you see it, you're like, holy shit, I can't believe they really pulled that in. But they recreated a lot of awesome stuff that it was... I really thought
it was supposed to happen like immediately prior, right?
Yeah.
The ending
of the movie is the dog running, so yeah. The beginning of the John Carpenter's film is The Thing. Mm-hmm. And again, that was, you know, it was a remake too, so.
Yeah. No, they did a good job of not undermining anything or changing anything about the original.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't revisions at all, but also it didn't like the scope of it. Didn't like wasn't overblown or something to you know
it extended the movie basically all it was it is
but in yeah. The effects, the CGI creature effects were not that, I mean they were totally based on the practical effects of the original
right.
movie.
I think they did a lot of practical effects in that yeah. movie.
I think Eric's summing up of the three different types of fear,
yeah,
that's a great, you know, evaluation of what makes a good horror story. We haven't really talked very much about literature and, you know, as sort of the origin of horror
mm-hmm.
as a genre and how it grew and how movies sort of took on a life of their own. And so we'll talk about that a little bit in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of
a lot of literature to talk about. I mean, from Stephen King writing all these horror yeah. magazines, you know, in the 50s and all these 50s, like, B-movies that came from little... horror stories, but there's just so much horror literature out there that's really good.
Yeah, the whole episode on that.
What makes great horror literature as opposed to, you know, obviously like Eric said, you can imagine something way more horrible than you can actually put on the screen, but so you have to express that horror in different ways on the screen than you do
yeah.
on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that a little bit more in part two of our horror trilogy. And thank you very much, Wayne, for being here.
Woo!
Yes, thank you.
Necronomicast.
And we'll drag out this ending as awkwardly as possible. No, is there anything else to wrap it up? Was that concise enough? All right, good. Just shut up.
Dark Wings, Dork Words, a Game of Thrones podcast. Conceived by Chuck Davis, produced by Boombox Productions, recorded in Omaha, Nebraska. Featuring Chuck Davis, Molly Welsh, Eric Salonis, and Wayne Brecky of Necronomicast. You can listen to the Reverend Podfather and Dr. Death at Necronomicast.com. Do it.